sweeping the eastern third of the nation is being committed by creatures who feast upon the flesh of their victims.
The world ended, didn't you get the memo?
They're dead, and you're gonna be next.
Wake up! Time to die.
It's a full moon. Beware the moon, and stick to the road. Oops.
I vote we get back to the slaughtered lamb.
Yeah.
You never grow old, Michael. And you'll never die, but you must feed.
My little brother, a goddamn shit-sucking vampire. Will you wait till Mom finds out, buddy?
Detail, I guess I forgot to mention. You die, you lose.
This is now the United States of
EMZT Radio.
This is Lucan Wolf, and you're listening to EMZT Radio with your hosts, the Sinister Sisters.
Sinister Sisters.
Welcome to another Sinister Sisters. I am Bane Hellborn with my sister,
Scorpio Girl.
And today's discussion is just generally about psychopaths.
Those slippery little bastards.
So we got a couple of lists here. Okay, we have, this is from unrealitymag.com, 13 of the most memorable movie psychopaths.
And first one. No, the first one is good.
First one is the Joker from The Dark Knight, Heath Ledger's absolute best role before he passed away.
I will have to say I didn't see the movie.
Oh my god, you did not see Dark Knight?
No.
What the hell is wrong with you?
I think I stopped watching Batman movies after, like, what, the third one? Second one? I don't know.
Oh, this was pre-
Christian Bale.
Christian Bale. Pre-Christian Bale.
I think I didn't even see that one either. I think I saw the one before Christian Bale, and that's the last one I saw.
That's why I said pre-Christian Bale. Anyway, The Joker, a self-described agent of chaos, is about as psychopathic as one can get. He doesn't care about how he looks. I mean, obviously, by his makeup and his attire, which was bright colors.
Well, here's the thing. With his physical attributes, he kind of had to accept that. There's no plastic surgery in that one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Jack Nicholson's Joker was more clown-like because the way his injury came about.
But see, but that's the thing. I think Jack Nicholson's character was more to the comic book character.
Yeah.
Like a
more clown-like.
Ha 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 ha, look what I did. Whereas I'm sure this Joker was more like, I'm really pissed off and I don't care and I'm just going to ruin anybody's life because I can and I'm a right fucker for that.
Yeah.
But see, that's the thing, because I think maybe because I'm more of a comic book person, they took more of the Arkham Asylum mm-hmm. kind of feel for it, because in that the Joker was the sane one and Batman was the insane one in the mental hospital. So I mean, I don't know, but the Joker persona, I think, is really good as being a, like, I don't care, I'm going to mess you up and then I'm going to have a good laugh about it,
right?
Which is, in my book, typical fuckery right there.
Now, Heath Ledger, as opposed to Jack Nicholson, so like we were talking about, Jack Nicholson, he did the more comic book version, which was more clown art.
Right.
To where Heath Ledger was scary. He was more extreme.
Well, no, it was also more Arkham Asylum. Yeah. More of the dark side of Batman.
The very dark side.
Yeah.
There's one.
Which could be a symbolism of the Joker being a part of Batman's insanity, multiple personality.
Right. He was. He was Batman's dark, dark side.
See?
Yeah.
That's why Batman was crazy.
That's why he could never kill him. Couldn't kill him. Always was about beating him, but never killing him.
And also, here's the one thing which my theory might prove a little bit true, is that Batman had such an identity crisis himself that he was Bruce Wayne, but not many people knew of Bruce Wayne, only his reputation.
And the family money.
And family money, where the women that got involved with him knew Bruce Wayne and knew that reputation, and that's what he gave. But then when he turned into Batman, yet again, couldn't tell anybody. Like, he thought he was, like, better than what he probably really was. Was probably a psychopath, so...
Well, yeah, Batman himself was a psychopath because his whole purpose of being Batman was mostly about revenge.
Exactly, which is kind of like a evil kind of trait.
Which is mostly... So the revenge he was doing was revenge for his parents' death.
Because, but, like you said, could never kill any of his...
Could never kill. He was not about killing, but he was all about beating. Beating the enemy, beating his nemesis, but never killing.
But being able to continue to beat them.
Yeah, because the thing is, he, like you said, he's multiple personalities, possibly.
He is. It's gotta be.
If he killed any of those personalities, he'd be killing himself.
Oh, geez. Oh. We're just getting deep here, aren't we?
Oh, wow. Okay, next one. Anyway, Hannibal Lecter, Silence of the Lambs.
Okay.
Now, this one was a more sophisticated psycho, because he was psychotic, yes, but he had, like, a code of ethics.
See, and that's why I really respect Hannibal Lecter, because although he was portrayed as being this, like, animalistic, you know, kind of evil among evil person, he really did have a code of ethic, because he, really, if you look back on it, his hidden intentions were really pretty good.
Were more towards stopping evil.
Exactly, but yet he was evil himself just because he, like, took a bite out of somebody or something.
Yeah, it started off with a bite.
Yeah. It always
then,
does.
And so then that's, like, the best way to get rid of the evidence is to eat it.
So basically, his reputation preceded him through probably media and law enforcement, yeah, because he was making law enforcement look bad because...
Plus he became, like, a myth.
Exactly. So, when what is that line from Who Shot Liberty Vance? When
the legend becomes fact,
print the legend.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened. Is he was just like, you know what? Fuck it. If I can be no more or no less, or what they think of me, or what I'm doing, then shh.
And plus, he hid this psychoness by being like a man of refined taste and character.
That's part of it. He was so well educated that his education just made him feel above all this silly sheeple and stupid people amongst the world.
Plus the fact was he was a highly well-respected, renowned psychiatrist. So he really knew the inner workings of people, and he could spot the dumb fuckers who needed to die quicker than most people.
See, so although what he did may have seemed, you know, evil.
Because he was killing.
We gotta look at the people he killed.
Yeah, look at the people he killed.
I mean, come on, I'm not...
He started off killing, the flutist?
Yes.
Because he was a bad flute player. Just really bad, awful, and he had such a refined hearing. He could actually hear each individual orchestra player in the orchestra, and that flutist just pissed him off.
Well, see, so we could even bring it to layman's terms with, like, how we personify... you know, these little pop singers that start out all sweet and nice, and mm-hmm. then they just turn to shit, mm-hmm. and then we're glorifying them for being shit.
Yeah.
Hannibal Lecter was like, no, this person's not going to get a chance to ruin any more music.
Yeah. They are better off being gone. I am doing a public service, which he really did. And his code of ethics was also, we were talking about, he was mainly cleaning up evildoers. So,
that came across his path.
That he found, yeah. So he was a more refined psycho.
But I still hold respect for him.
Oh, yeah. this is, like, he's the top psycho because he had a code of ethics.
Yes. So he really doesn't belong on the list, but it was great talking about him.
He sort of doesn't, but he does because of how he went about things, because he is psycho.
Okay.
And OCD with the way he had to clean his hands a lot. So anyway, Patrick Bateman.
Ah, this is one of my favorite movies. Jeez.
Now this movie kind of is a head spinner at the end because he, like, spills his guts to his lawyer saying he killed all these people, but the lawyer's like, no, nobody died. What are you talking about? So you're like, did he really kill people?
Well, see, and this is the thing, too. And the reason why I relate to Patrick Bateman so well is because there are some times that I wake up, and although you can see my cold eyes and shake my dead hand, I'm just simply not there.
Yeah.
I mean, I just, the depths of his depression of knowing that everything in life is just not it. So when he let his mind wander to, you know what, fuck it, the world's my playground because I'm in this existence kind of reality, you know?
And plus he was what I call Hannibal Lecter light because he was all about his image. He did these specific tasks for the face peeling, the exercise to make him more...
More
defined, muscular-wise, and in shape. But
it wasn't for him. It was for the world.
It was for the... Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Which is like...
He personified this yuppie, Wall Street, perfect, because obviously he's gorgeous, well-built, he had beautiful skin, his nails were just immaculate. I mean, he was promoting this package of... elite.
And he was elite. Just, I guess he was just sick of these insipid relationships with people, because I have actually used the line when I ran into a former or ex friend and was like, oh, hey, is that you? And I'm like, no. And I put their name.
Yeah.
It's not me. You're mistaken, and walked off. Right. And it was like a freeing moment to be able to use that line on this person who I knew for like since childhood, but I really didn't like this person anymore. Couldn't stand this person. It was freeing to actually be free at that moment. Yeah, I felt like crap afterwards, but then as time went on, I was like, I love that moment. That's a great moment. But I really relate to Patrick, the character Patrick Bateman, so much more than I would like to admit. And when I try talking about it, people are like,
they don't get it. They don't get it. Yeah.
So maybe you're right. He's just a product of just, again, like Hannibal Lecter, the world shouldn't be, people in the world and situations should not be this difficult, should not be this insane and disgusting.
But he was also promoting that he was better than everyone else.
He kind of was. He got himself up to physically looking, financially attaining. Mm-hmm. He was the American dream.
Yeah, he lived the dream.
It wasn't just an ego. He was, because he got there and found out that it was shit like the rest of being there.
Yeah, that it was.
Because if you're not there, if you're unattractive, working a dead end job, just living a stagnant life because you can't get out of your situation, whatever it may be that's restraining you, he found it was just as horrible as being the American dream. Mm-hmm. And that's why he just wanted to fit in.
Awesome. Okay, we have Norman Bates.
Oh, jeez.
Which...
Okay.
So this guy has serious mother issues. He was unable to... He had no people skills, because it was just him and his mother. He had no people skills. He couldn't fit in with regular society, because his mother made him... What is it, a second husband, lover type thing? Just isolated him from the world. So when he came across people, they knew there was something wrong with him because.
He was very good at being nice and charming.
Well, see, that's the thing. He
was a great chameleon because when parents mess up their children in whatever ways, what is their greatest skill that these type of people have? Their ability to become a chameleon in any situation with any type of person, but yet have this secret kind of like urge, desire.
But he really couldn't socialize.
Of course not, because his mommy wouldn't cut the string because of her own, you know, like Ed Gein, a real psychopathic killer.
Same thing. He had mommy issues.
Mommy issues. I mean, look at like Eminem. You could tell with the songs, mommy issues.
Yeah.
So this character was truly a product of mommy issues.
And plus, you know, what'd we find out? Mommy was actually dead, and he was using mommy as a split personality.
Because she wouldn't let go, and he didn't know how to let go.
So anything that threatened his isolation, mommy would come out and eliminate something that would take Norman away from her.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Good psycho. Now, Mr. Blonde from Reservoir Dogs.
Mr. Blonde, all I could see him is doing that shuffle backwards.
Michael Madsen. I just keep hearing that song. Yeah, like you said, that whole dance scene where he's cutting up this guy, dancing around him to that song.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I see. He was all about
enjoying it too.
He was enjoying the kill.
Well, I don't think enjoying the kill, but enjoying to be able to put on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, really get into being free enough to go, you know what? I don't give a fuck about you. I know you're dirty, a cop, and I'm going to hurt you because I can.
So it says right here, if you've seen Reservoir Dogs, to hear that song, Steeler's Wheels Stuck in the Middle, to hear that song and not think about a razor slicing through your ear.
And you know what? I do. Every time I hear that song, I do the little shuffle he does. But that song, I think the song was perfect, too, for his character.
Oh, it was.
I mean, I bet you that's his theme song every time he did do a kill.
Oh, I'm sure. That's what I imagine him doing every time.
You know, because he is stuck in the middle. He's stuck in the middle of who he thinks he is, who he is, and what he likes to do.
And what he's really doing.
Or what he's good at. Yeah. So this is another, and he did it without any, like, emotion of you know, humanity. Like, he truly, I think, was born with his humanity switched off.
Mm-hmm.
Which I wish that were a real thing that, you know, normal people can do. Obviously, real people can do this, like, you know, hurting somebody without even a care or in the world.
Having a laugh.
But then turning around and being like, I'm so sorry. Yeah, whatever.
No.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't see this movie, No Country for Old Men, Anton Chigurh.
Okay, I did see this movie. I really can't tell you that I know exactly why he was doing what he was doing,
but his
kills were brilliant.
This is also on another list from a doctor, sciencenews.org. He said that Anton Chigurh is one of the most frighteningly realistic representations of a real psycho. He diagnosed him as a primary classic idiopathic psychopath.
Well, I do remember about when his killings and his workings were so instantaneous. Like, he saw the steps in his head, like 20 steps ahead of what situation he was going to be in. Like, I remember something about blowing out a lock in a door, and it was just so brilliant.
Yes. Okay, so contract killer hauls about a bolt pistol attached to a tank of compressed air.
Yeah.
A handy tool both for shooting out door locks and for shooting people in the head.
The thing is about his kind of psychopath, it's like he was a brilliant chess player. He had these steps out in his head for like 30 different moves of how he was going to get in somewhere or kill somebody. And he did it, again, without any emotion, without any thought, without any kind of
this doctor says he does his job and can sleep without any problems. This reminds him of two real-life professional hitmen who he interviewed, and they were like this. Cold, smart, no guilt, no anxiety, no depression.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like you said, emotionless, and he even enjoyed what he did. And he also killed other people he wasn't contracted to kill.
And see, in real life, that's one thing that always, like, is a red flag for me, which kind of is, like, scary, is when you know somebody that can be in a tough situation or be lying or doing weird bad things to other people, and then they hit the pillow and they're asleep in 2 seconds. No problem.
Yeah.
No problem.
No No problem at all.
I know a couple of people, which I was just like, oh my goodness, you can sleep without.
How can you sleep with after you did just that?
Yeah. Yeah. After hurting somebody or lying to somebody, and you could just hit the pillow and 2 seconds out, and I'd be like, oh my
lord. There's something wrong with you. Yeah. Okay, now we have John Doe from 7.
John Doe.
Now, how messed up was this? Okay, he was following a list of the 7 deadly sins.
Which, again, was like kind of like a, he thought he was doing ridding the bad the people.
Yeah.
But it was really just a, I'm trying to help get rid of sins and come across. I don't know. I think he seemed to research these people before, though.
Yes, he did, because their torture death was specifically designed for these people.
Yeah. But you know what? It's kind of like a fine line. Because, you know, I was all for John Doe in the movie up until the very last scene. But after watching the movie several hundred times,
yeah,
I kind of get why he did what he did at the very end and to who.
Yeah.
You know, because although Brad Pitt's character, I can't remember, is Mills?
Mills, yeah.
Okay. Although Mills's character seemed to be like a cowboy. He was
a total young Turk cowboy.
But he had anger issues himself.
Yes.
Which is not a good thing to have. You can't just fly off of anger and mess things up and then be like, oh, I'm sorry, my bad.
Which is why Morgan Freeman was like his balance, because he was older, he had patience, he could think clearly to where Mills, Brad Pitt's character, just was the young hotshot fly off the handle type
of guy. But see, my point is he was one of the 7 deadly sins.
He was on John Doe's list.
He was, because he wasn't, I mean, I think it's just because it was Brad Pitt playing the character that, like, probably pulled at all our hearts that John Doe was, like, something bad, but.
And what was extra fucked up about John Doe character was that the cops didn't catch him. He walked into the cop station and said, hello,
I did it.
And you're like, what the? Because Brad Pitt had just said, these guys just don't walk in the door. Here comes John Doe right through the door.
Exactly.
So this was like another, he's another Hannibal Lecter type.
I know.
With the code of ethics, but he was on the more, darker side.
I don't know, though. I mean, think about it, really. If you were pushed to the extreme, which I feel like a lot of people are with situations in life and depression and, you know, girlfriends, boyfriends, husbands,
and
wives, just whatever.
Had enough.
If you've gotten pushed far enough, I'm sure going Hannibal Lecter or John Doe would probably, I mean, I could see myself doing it if pushed far enough.
And he left a lot of clues, too, because when they went to his apartment, he had these shelves and shelves of notebooks.
And you know what? When I saw that, my first thought was, oh my gosh, can I find those books?
Yes. I mean, with Morgan Freeman giving little snippets of inside these notebooks, you're like, damn, that's some deep shit.
See? Wow. I don't know. I don't think John Doe could really be put up there as a psychopathic killer. I put him in the level of my same respect as Hannibal Lecter. I'm giving you a gold star, John Doe and Hannibal Lecter. Gold star.
Yeah, because they had a code of, well, he had a more twisted form of ethics that he was following, to where Hannibal, he's more refined.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Okay. Now, Alex, Clockwork Orange.
Oh my God. Oh, jeez.
Okay.
Okay, this is just a real pig fucker in my book, okay? Yeah. He's just a real pig fucker.
I think he did not have a clear sense of like a list of what to do. He was just doing shit to fuck shit up and make people
innocent people. Yeah,
he was coming across innocent people and just wanted to torture the shit out of them because he could. Only because he could, and he wanted to, and he had to.
I mean, look what he did to his own droogies.
Oh my God! He fucked up his own club. You know, just to prove he was top dog.
And that's the thing, because I feel like in life, I'm a droogie.
That got shit on by Yolita.
And that's what's really hard for me, is because I want to be like, you know, I want to have that kind of sense of, hey, that's not right, fuck you. But no. I always end up being the one like, oh my God, yeah. I just got fucked over.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, this, the Clockwork Orange, I'm sorry, the most horrible scene was that awful rape scene to Singin' in the Rain. That was the worst part of the movie.
That is, but it's one of my favorite songs didn't come out of the movie, but was inspired by the movie.
What song?
Cassie Eats Cockroaches. I love that song.
Oh my God.
It's an awesome, yeah. No, I'm sorry. I really like, I've watched this movie like hundreds of times as well. Yeah. Hundreds of times.
But this guy does get his justice, sort of, when he comes full circle to that, the husband that survived the rape scene.
But look what the husband had to go through to get to that point to match his enemy.
But then also he sort of got let go because at the end, after all the, like, what was it, the reconditioning they gave him and the reconditioning didn't hold.
Well, you can't.
And you know he was going to go back to doing the same shit again.
I'm sorry. Reconditioning, rehab, I call shenanigans. I mean, there's no such thing.
This was back in the 70s.
It doesn't matter. Even up to this day, a leopard cannot and will not change into a sheep or a
nice and cuddly.
It's just never going to happen. So, like, when I say, and I'm not saying if you've been through rehab and you haven't done drugs for like years and years, I get that. However, how many times a day since rehab do you still think about it?
Yeah.
See, so I'm just saying, rehab, reconditioning, I call shenanigans.
Next up, we have Annie Wilkes from Misery.
Okay, this is just, she's just, oh.
Now, I wouldn't call her a true psychopath. It was just a super obsessed fan who got her wish to meet her idol, but yet didn't want to let him go.
But, no, there's a backstory to her.
Well.
What was her backstory? She was a nurse in some...
Oh, and she was a maternity nurse.
She was a maternity nurse, so there was prior to being a super fan girl.
Yeah, but yeah, because she had a god complex, because what she did was she, like, almost killed these children she was taking care of in the hospital, and then bringing them back before they died, so she could get these huge kudos.
Munchausen.
Yeah, these huge, like, accolades of, like, oh my God, you're such... You saved our child's life, blah, blah, blah. She'd get awards. She'd get newspaper articles written about her, and it went on and on until finally she went too far.
But that's the thing, though.
And then she started killing.
I wonder what happened to her, like, childhood. Because obviously she's a plain Jane-looking kind of gal.
Yeah.
Obviously she's pretty dumbed down in social respects and things like that. So, obviously, she probably spent a majority of her life being shit on for being a good person, and she just flipped that switch.
But also, she did have a sort of code she was following, because she was talking about... I loved her passionate scene where she was talking about when she went to go see the movies as a kid, and they were called cliffhangers.
Mm-hmm.
And her idol, like, one of the comic book heroes she was watching, was stuck in a car. He was trapped in the car, couldn't get out. It was going over a cliff. It goes over the cliff. The car burns, crash burns. You don't see anybody get out. But the next week, she goes back and he jumps out before the car goes over the cliff. And she's like, that's not what happened. She's like a reminder of, oh, wait.
Mm-hmm.
You missed a spot.
Right. Just like in her own life.
Yeah.
Wait. I was always a good kid.
Yeah.
I was born, you know, ugly and stupid, but I was good, you know.
Yeah.
So I get it, but I love her lines. I still use Dirty Bird and Cock-a-Doodie. He didn't get out of the Cock-a-Doodie car!
Now, in the end, however, her idol had to end her, because she was... It was just a battle, because he would not take being her captive.
Well, it wasn't just that. he had to end her just like he tried to end the character that she got so pissed off that he killed off.
Oh, yes. Okay, yeah.
So it was kind of like, yeah. It was kind of like him living a real life
horror.
Well, no, he was living his it was like him being the author, writing this book, living the real life of the trials of killing off a character.
Right.
So the symbolism was kind of like an ironic one to me.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, that was.
See? So. Look for the nine.
Okay, this is another one.
I don't really know what to say
can't
on
really
this one.
Discuss Cape Fear, but Max Cady.
Cape Fear, I really don't remember. I watched it when it came out, and that was like, yeah.
Okay, well, the basis of Cape Fear is Robert De Niro was a psychopathic rapist that his lawyer had evidence that his last victim was not really a victim because she was a slutty girl, so it was kind of consensual. But the fact that she was 16, you know, so the lawyer kept that hidden, that it wasn't really rape. And so Max Cady goes to jail for 14 years, and he comes out getting revenge on the lawyer, but he went around the lawyer, like his friends, the lawyer's friends, then went after the family, then and then the lawyer himself, he was going after.
Wait.
But this whole thing was all about revenge against the lawyer who put him away.
But let's negate the fact that he, you know.
Well, of course, the bad side is this guy is a rapist and just a psychotic brute of a man.
So this is one of those, like, kind of like, the lawyer did me dirty.
Yeah.
Love the shank.
Yeah, so this
isn't really a psycho.
This was more revenge just against one
person.
The movie was all about a revenge against one person.
But my point is it's not like revenge and he's a psychopath. He's just, I really think he's stupid because.
Yeah. Well, he was going off his emotions, so he wasn't careful.
I don't think it was care. I think he was just, I don't know. I think he believed his own lie that he was innocent.
There you go.
Which is a kind of a psychopathic nature because I've met way too many people that tell so many lies. Mm-hmm. Although you show them proof and evidence of them lying, you get a horde of people around them to tell them and show proof that they're lying, but yet they continually told the same lie over and over. That to them themselves, this lie is true. Right. It's true, and they're the victim. Ooh, the victim card. I hate the people that pull the victim card.
And that's what he was pulling, was the victim
card. Yeah, he's really just a pussy, so.
Okay. Next up, Alex Forrest from Fatal Attraction.
I really don't know. The only thing I could say is,
Glenn Close. This was her ultimate role. I'm sorry. This was the best role she's done.
Yeah, it's true. But you know what? As a recently dumped woman myself, I can just see that these type of men have always been a constant in her life.
Yeah.
And just being a product of these charming, wonderful snake in the grass that's a majority out there that she runs into.
And it seems like a lot because she is completely twisted. Well, she's like a successful person. She meets these guys. She keeps telling them
up front that hey, I've been done dirty a lot.
I've been done dirty a lot.
Really
yeah, I
hurt
don't
me.
I don't want to do this again. And they're like, oh no, baby,
baby,
it's forever.
I love you. Yeah. You're so special. I love your heart. Your heart is so beautiful.
And then,
and you've helped me, and you're so caring, and I just love you so much.
And no, and it's forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and then the next day they dump her and don't want to talk to her ever again.
Because they're either screwing someone else, or they're married.
Or they're married, like in this
movie.
Or
they just really don't care. They just want to get a step up in their life. Yeah. And so when they don't need her and what she can do for them anymore. I mean, that's the story of my life, and but, I say that up front, but I'm sure my psycho Glenn Close scene is coming up in my life sometimes.
Now, and then because this is keeps happening to this woman all the time, she just starts losing her reality button.
So
and then she meets up with Michael Douglas and
character.
Yeah, his character, and he's married, but he didn't tell her right off. And she becomes highly obsessed because he wouldn't call her and blah, blah, meet up with her.
Ignoring her.
And not, yeah,
not
ignoring
telling her.
Telling
her the truth, yeah. Not being honest.
So she, but she does all these weird, twisted things. Like she killed his little girl's pet. You know?
Right.
She just makes all these phone calls.
Doesn't he kidnap?
She was faking that she got pregnant.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she just loses the complete reality hold on her brain.
Well, and I can see how that happened, because it really hurts when you get dumped without a reason, or the reason is so superficial that you can't help thinking that you were just this big toy.
Yeah, toy.
In the back of the closet to bring out when you're needed, mm-hmm. and then shoved back in the closet.
And forgotten about.
And forgotten about.
Again.
Again.
Yeah.
And ignored, mm-hmm. when you're sitting there watching this person, you know, pay attention to everybody else on the planet. Mm-hmm. And then you get ignored, and the minute you say something, they get butthurt.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I can't do this because I'm so butthurt because you care about me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I can see it happening.
But, of course, the movie ends badly because she loses all control. She cannot come back to reality land, so she has to end.
Yeah.
So that's the only way to stop her at that point, is you have to end her.
Right.
Okay. Eileen Wuornos.
Oh, yeah.
Monster. Charlize Theron's ultimate movie. They made her so fucking ugly.
Shut up. I hate that. I hate people commenting on ugly people.
But I mean, she looks bad.
She looks like normal plain Jane gal.
Okay.
Stop that. I hate fat people calling people fat and ugly people calling ugly people ugly. I hate that. She was just a regular woman.
But that's what they made her look like, was this regular plain Jane.
You know what? To tell you the truth, I've watched the documentaries of Eileen,
yeah.
and seen the movie, and they actually made
Charlize.
I can never say her name right. Look, a lot like Eileen.
Look like her.
So I mean,
but anyway,
let's just take the physicalness out of the side.
Okay,
it's gonna
anyway,
piss me off.
Anyway, the whole point was she was a prostitute because it was the only way she could make some quick money. And she started killing the guys she was having sex with and stealing their money.
But here's the thing, you know,
but
ultimately
then,
underneath it, I think this was another jilted girl from birth,
mm-hmm.
you know, jilted by family that were supposed to love her, but treated her like shit. And then, you know, kicked out into the world without any kind of skills to survive. So she learned on her own skills to survive. Mm-hmm. And although she, you know, the reason why she started killing these men was because she did get raped. Right. But not just that, but she was getting the money because she met a woman,
mm-hmm.
that she fell completely in love with that ended up throwing Eileen to the wolves just to save her own neck.
Well, yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think she was psychotic.
So this was a justified.
No.
That was justified.
I don't think she was psychotic. I just think she was a product of being a jilted.
Of her environment.
Of being a jilted human being. Not a jilted woman, not a jilted whatever. A jilted human being from birth.
So she was a product of her environment. That
God, yeah.
everybody made her this way.
Exactly.
Which is
because
true.
Sometimes I ask myself the things that I've been through with people and what they've done to me is, why have I not killed anybody? Why have I never been to jail yet? Why have I never done something really shitty, horrible yet, you know?
Well, because we have a code of ethics.
Damn it. Playing by rules that no one else does,
yeah.
and we always wonder why.
Well,
we're
but it
losing.
Keeps us. What happens? What does this code of ethics do? It keeps us out of jail. Keeps us our name out of the paper.
But look what it also does: keeps us finding or being magnetically a magnet to all these psychopathic
yeah.
people.
We attract all the weirdos.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
So
we can sort of relate.
Sort of relate.
Okay.
If you're a person that has no problems with hurting someone else for whatever reason, mostly because you're a selfish bastard, here's a little tip. Fucking don't. Don't try it. Don't do it. Or, better yet, get a code of fucking ethics and target fucking people that fucking deserve it.
Yeah.
And leave the innocents, bystanders that are genuinely caring, genuinely trying to find humanity in this world, and quit being the pig fuckers that you know you are. That is my ending tip.
I love it.
Thank you. has gone, and now I see the day. Now I see the day.
I can't. my wolf. Yeah, I own a wolf because he's terrifying. Dancing in the moonlight on my future gravesite. Lurking in the shadows as the sun is a parasite. Sleeping in a haunted tomb. Midnight is my afternoon. I'll scare you in an instant as soon as you see my living room. Describe my deep obsession for the night. I've been wired to desire everything that's dark inspired. If it's wicked, I'm addicted. If it's vile, I go wild. Many things most find appalling, I find calming. Just as long as it's dark, scary, creepy, macabre, strange, unusual.
We'll be right back. This is EMZT Radio.
We had new musics, starting with Autumn in Helen, our new Italian Gothic dark wave band with their song 66 Breaths. Another band from Colorado called Flames of Ice, their song Without. Creeping Beauty, their new song Under a Blood Red Moon. Jules Marie with As Long as It's Dark. Lucan Wolf, Queen of Darkness and My Own Sorrow, Gloom. Be sure to check out these bands on our emztradio.podbean.com page. On the left side are all the links for all the bands that we feature on our podcast. Be sure to check out all their music sites, and please do. If you like their music, please go and buy it. You will not be sorry, because I have all their musics, and it's just incredible. And we so want to thank them for very kindly letting us play their music on our podcast, because their music adds an extra touch of darkness to our Horror Talk podcast, and it sounds so much better than just us rambling on. And let's get into some campaigns going on that we were tracking. Our friend Jack Thomas Smith, with his Indiegogo campaign of In the Dark, this new zombie vampire film that he invited me and MJ to be zombie vampires. Unfortunately, they didn't make their campaign goal, and I hope they try again, because this film needs to be made. And plus, I want to be a zombie vampire. And I'm a little disappointed that not many people gave to this campaign. I posted it as much as possible when I was online, but I hope they do try again, because this is going to be an epic film. I'm also following Wolf Cop 2. They're almost at their goal. There's only 46 hours left. And I contributed to this because their first movie, Wolf Cop, was just hilarious. It was cheesy, but it was pretty good. I mean, the Wolf Cop makeup was still not bad for an indie film. So Wolf Cop 2, it's going to be even wilder than the first one. I think you should check it out. It's all in the spirit of fun, and that's all that matters. So they're almost there, so it'll be good. And that was on Indiegogo.com. And on Kickstarter, Lloyd Kaufman was looking for funding for Return to Nuke'em High Volume 2, which I love trauma films. They are so cheesy, they're so stupid, but they're hilarious, so you just can't help but love them. And if you don't love them, that's okay too, but I love trauma films. So I definitely contributed to Lloyd Kaufman's campaign, and I'm getting a digital script and an on-screen thank you credit, which my name will be in the credits of the film. I can't wait for that. So that was pretty good. They even made over the amount they were looking for, so keep an eye out for Return to Nuke'em High Volume 2. Well, I think that wraps up this episode of EMZT Radio. There will be more Sinister Sisters, so stay tuned. And also keep an ear out for Little Boom Doom with more of his EMZT minis. And of course, stay tuned for another episode of EMZT Radio.
I spent 8 years trying to reach him, and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up, because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
And let me give you some advice. When you leave a man for dead, make sure he's really dead.
Red Rum!
Is she back home? I'm a murderer. I'm a freak. But here, among the monsters, I'm normal. I like it here. I want to stay.
Oh, great, Valium. Not only will we be able to get to sleep, but if we're attacked in the middle of the night, we won't even care.